9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Imagine going to your favorite restaurant and being served by a robot on wheels. It sounds like a scene straight out of the Jetsons.
Never fear, while Rosie's here.
It's Rosie to the rescue.
It's already happening, and not just in China or Japan. Robot waiters are also in places as remote as the Himalayas and as familiar as restaurants like Pizza Hut. And in the kitchen, we've been perfectly happy to let them take the lead for decades. Coffee machines, microwaves, dishwashers, rice cookers, kitchens are teeming with automated helpers.
I always call them the robots in the kitchen. I tell my kids, okay, you know, we're going to fire up the rice robot now. You know, we're going to fire up the dish robot, which does our dishes. And it really is a robot. It doesn't move around, but it responds to its environment in a pretty sophisticated way.
And what's coming next are robots that are more independent and automated than ever.
And when a restaurant company is able to shave even seconds off each task, that adds up to minutes.
And so my hope is that years in the future, we're going to look back at people who had to stand in front of a char broiler and inhale smoke and grease-laden vapors for their entire life, the same way we look back at people who worked in mines. I think that's going to be kind of an antiquated role, hopefully.
These robots sense their environment and the food they're making in extremely detailed ways.
There's a lot of sensors that are sensing, like, if something dispensed properly or was sliced properly, weight sensors that you probably can't see right away unless you knew what to look for. Temperature sensing, that's how we cook patties pretty much perfectly every time.
But does the drive toward more precision mean humans will be pushed out of the kitchen?
I'm not worried at all about burger flipping robots because they're expensive and they're difficult to maintain and they're not that great at what they do.
When you're doing anything automated, people question, oh my gosh, is there this sort of dystopian people not interacting with people thing happening?
From robotic espresso bars to fully automated burger chefs, this episode we look at what a new wave of automation could mean for workers and the quality of our food.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
I'm in downtown San Francisco at an eatery called Itza. When it opened a few years back, it was hailed as the nation's first automated restaurant chain. It sells items like burrito bowls and barbecued chopped salads. To order, you tap on a touchscreen. No contact with people required.
So a lot of this is very self-service oriented, where you walk in, you order from a kiosk or an iPad, and when your food is ready, it shows up in a thing we call a cubby.
That's Chief Executive Tim Young.
Think of it as a really nice-looking locker. And on the front door of that locker is a TV screen, but it's a TV screen that you can actually see through. So we call that a transparent LCD.
The whole place looks like a giant vending machine. And the experience of ordering food feels a bit like calling a Lyft or buying a book online.
That is a general societal movement that Itza had very little to do with in terms of pushing. What we did was make that available inside a restaurant.
If I didn't have an appointment here, I don't think I would have known it was open, or even a restaurant. All there is to see here are lots and lots of screens. But that's just the front of house. Back in the kitchen, things look more familiar.
We haven't been very public about the back of house.
I promise you no one will see it.
Yeah, okay.
Stepping into the kitchen felt like lifting the green curtain in The Wizard of Oz.
For a robot restaurant, there are people here making food.
There are people here. Behind the scenes, the way we've set it up from an operations perspective is we've got these little discrete stations. Almost think of them, for people that are familiar with a Chipotle, where you've got all the ingredients in front of you and you assemble in real time.
Typically, a lot of the work in a restaurant has to do with coordinating who's doing what.
There's a lot of yelling, there's chaos, there's just talking back and forth. We built a software system that does all of that for us.
In other words, this software system acts like the conductor of an orchestra, telling people what to make and how to do it. The idea is to improve efficiency and the bottom line.
Simply because restaurants have such tight margins, it is such a competitive world. It is a really hard business. And I don't think that means that jobs are going to come out of the restaurant. What we're going to see is more and more automation that makes people more efficient in their jobs.
But Itza recently shuttered locations in New York, Washington, D.C., and Berkeley. There's just two locations now, and they're both in San Francisco. The company is pivoting to selling their software to other restaurants. Meanwhile, some companies are experimenting with bots that help place orders. Recently, Taco Bell developed a chatbot called TacoBot. It lets users order certain items through a messaging app.
So, we are at Taco Bell headquarters. My name is Matt Prince.
He works in public relations, and we're chatting in the company's engineering lab outside Los Angeles. He's also the reason there's a taco emoji on your smartphone. But before there was a software bot, the Taco Titan experimented with a physical bot of the same name. This machine could make as many as 900 tacos an hour.
It was, for a long time, Taco Bell folklore. I'd heard around the hallways that this product existed. Nobody really knew anything about it. So I interviewed as many people as I could to get as much information about it as I could, and actually tracked down some people that worked here back in the 90s who were a part of it, engineers that were a part of it.
And this is what he found out.
Tacos were selling great, and the demand was very high. And so our engineering team was tasked with, how do we increase the production of tacos within the restaurants?
After a couple prototypes, they came up with an 8-foot-tall box that looks an awful lot like a refrigerator.
So you can see that the machine would pick up a tortilla, it would put it on a conveyor belt, go down the conveyor belt, automatically put in the meat, the lettuce, the tomatoes, the cheese. It would continue to shoot it down the conveyor belt, wrap it automatically, and then shoot it down the ramp, and then our team members could take it from there.
And this machine? It's not empty.
There's a roll of wrappers for the tacos that are in the base of the machine, so it was kind of cool to uncover some really cool 90s packaging that we don't always get to see.
It's a very official-looking power on and off buttons.
I don't know. I mean, we could try it. I just hope it doesn't explode and cause a fire.
Yeah, that would be bad.
The taco bot never made it out of testing.
I think the biggest challenge was technologically they would break down and it would be a challenge. The team members obviously didn't know how to fix them, and so we'd have to bring in specialists to fix them.
It was cheaper and easier to hire more people to make tacos than to find robot repair people within distance of every single Taco Bell.
I also think it was a little bit ahead of its time. Obviously, automation now is much more acceptable from a consumer standpoint and also from a company standpoint.
In some ways, the challenges TacoBot encountered are still relevant to the robots of today. At a small coffee chain in downtown San Francisco called Cafe X, there's a robotic arm shuffling lattes and macchiatos behind a glass structure.
My name is Henry Hu. I'm the founder and CEO at Cafe X. So customers will order from our app, and the drink will be ready just as they show up. And because it's an automated system, it's very consistent. So you're not going to get a bad drink one day and a good drink another day. It's always going to be perfect.
Imagine a coffee machine paired with a robotic arm that serves each cup. In between serving drinks to customers, the robot does a little dance.
And what makes good coffee is how well those machines are cared for and the recipes that are programmed into the machines, and then, of course, the ingredients.
Making coffee precisely is the more complicated and creative part of this job. So if a machine already does that, why make a person stand around shuffling cups? This robotic arm is more busboy than barista. But this isn't completely without humans. People hand out the pastries, which are harder for machines to handle without mangling. Humans are also there in case the robot malfunctions.
And then we have staff that are sort of like staff at a retail store or a nice restaurant, where they're focused on answering questions and just give people a more kind of human experience. You know, people often will say, are you killing jobs by automating making coffee? Basically, the answer is no, because instead of people working like robots, moving cups around, basically shuffling cups and pushing buttons all day long, the jobs that we do have now are more on engineering, maintenance, customer service. So those jobs are definitely necessary to keep the robots working.
Restaurants may also need robots to keep the employees they have happy. There's a shortage of restaurant labor, and companies are trying to do more with less.
My name is Julie Jargon. I'm a staff writer for the Wall Street Journal, and I work out of LA.
She covers restaurants and food companies.
And at Dunkin' Donuts, for example, one of the complaints that they had from their employees was that one of the most mundane tasks they had involved creating thousands of handwritten labels per day to note the expiration dates of different ingredients that they were using. And that just took a lot of time. So what they did instead was they installed small terminals that print out expiration times, and that shaved a lot of time off that task.
And when a restaurant can save even a few seconds on each task, that adds up to hours.
And in the fast food industry in particular, that's a lot of time, and that means getting more people through the line faster and ultimately bringing up higher sales.
A Among those repetitive tasks people complain about is flipping burgers. And back in San Francisco, a restaurant called Creator has built a giant burger-making robot that manages the entire process from slicing the bun to grinding and cooking the meat.
Creator's a new kind of restaurant. At $6, we're serving a burger with a brioche roll with no preservatives or anything else.
Alex Vardakostas is the company's co-founder. He grew up flipping burgers at his family's restaurant.
I wouldn't say that flipping a burger is the culmination of the human spirit. So that's a great opportunity to build a device that can get us out of there and move into something that's just going to be a much more fulfilling role. And so my hope is that years in the future, we're going to look back at people who had to stand in front of a char broiler and inhale smoke and grease-laden vapors for their entire life, the same way we look back at people who worked in mines. Unfortunately, many still do. I think that's going to be kind of an antiquated role, hopefully.
But at this robot restaurant, a person helps you place your order.
You know, I don't want to live in a future where I don't talk to anyone anymore.
When you walk in the door, the first thing you notice is a 14-foot-long kiosk that cooks customizable fresh burgers from start to finish in about 5 minutes.
We have a machine that literally makes the world's freshest burger. It also uses some of the most precise techniques. For instance, we can dispense sauce down the milliliter. Also, because of the way the restaurant's set up and how efficient it is, we can spend more on the cost of ingredients than anyone else at our price point.
The whole thing looks like a glossy Rube Goldberg machine made of copper, wood, and glass that shuttles burger parts.
I don't want to gloat about how beautiful it is. People have said it belongs a block away in MoMA. I think it really is kind of a work of art. It's also a crazy technical feat of engineering.
David Bordeaux is in charge of culinary experience.
The conveyor where you see these little paddles pushing the burger cases along, that was something that took us a long time to figure out, but we did it for a couple of reasons. One, it allows us to move at different speeds. So one thing can be under the pickle station while another one is moving. And it also allows us to make a new experience for people to watch. It is very fun to watch.
He says this robot has hundreds of sensors.
There's a lot of sensors that are sensing, like, if something dispensed properly or was sliced properly, weight sensors that you probably can't see right away unless you knew what to look for. Temperature sensing, that's how we cook patties pretty much perfectly every time.
For all its smart sensors, the machine can't yet cater to special diets. It can't make a bunless burger, for instance, or one without dairy, though he says that's coming. At least for now, The Wall Street Journal's Christopher Mims says robots are unlikely to completely replace humans.
I don't think that's going to happen at all. I think what you're seeing is as we move to more and more of a service-based economy, which is happening because of automation in other areas, like in manufacturing, the real challenge is going to be we're going to have too many humans in restaurants because as robots displace people from other jobs, like making cars, let's say, their labor becomes cheap enough for them to be employed in restaurants and in the service sector.
While robots may still not be great at handling soft objects like food, they can help us get our meals faster.
Part of it is, you know, we're all experiencing time poverty. Convenience is valuable. And as we drive down the cost of that, people will opt for it every time. I mean, this is why drive-thrus exist in the first place. And now we're just taking the next logical step toward delivery. You also see people still occasionally talking about really convenient, if slightly unpleasant, foods like Soylent. Anderson Cooper recently gave an interview in which he said basically Soylent is all he eats anymore.
We want food that's healthier, higher quality, and convenient.
Otherwise, we'd all be eating TV dinners by now. I mean, let's not forget that starting in the 1950s, these were advertised as the ultimate convenience. Since then, it's mostly been downhill for sales of TV dinners. So we're looking for convenience, we're looking for quality, we're looking for health, and everybody's racing to figure out how to solve all of these things at once in the most time-efficient way possible. And it's also why you've seen the rise of platforms like Grubhub, which is doing really well, by the way. I mean, Grubhub is a business that's all margins. They don't own anything. They are just a marketplace, and it works out great for them.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Laura Sim and Daniela Hernandez, with help from Emma Silikens, Julie Jargon, and Christopher Mims. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Werdock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcast. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.